and of course goes on to talk about, you know, what we need: healthcare, good jobs, safe jobs, clean air, all of it. So we are going to wrap up here for the Old Mole. Locus Focus is on next, and that's Barbara Bernstein. We have Health Watch at 11, Dr. David Damon Tweedy, I'm sorry, and Madness Radio at 11:30. This is the Old Mole Variety Hour. I'm Denise Morris, your host. Patricia Kohlberg has been our engineer.
Good morning. You are tuned in to KBOO Portland, and it is just now turning 10 o'clock. At Health Watch today on the Boo at 11 o'clock, their Health Watch speaks to Dr. Damon Tweedy about his book, Black Men in a White Coat, which examines the complex ways in which both black doctors and patients must navigate the terrain of race and medicine. And at 11:30, Madness Radio looks at human rights in India and how the legacy of colonialism has affected mental health. Thanks, KBOO members, for your generous support. If you are not a current member, you can become one by going to kboo.fm and clicking on Donate. And now stay tuned for a special one-hour Locus Focus, which presents the premiere of Barbara Bernstein's latest documentary, Sacrifice Zones, the story about the pressure to transform a region of iconic landscapes and environmental stewardship into a global center for shipping fossil fuels.
Coming to the radio airwaves on Monday, June 5th at 11 p.m. The Ubu Hour Radio Western, Kill Faster Pussycat.
I don't care for the way you girls get your thrills. Enough is enough. Now give it back or I'll...
Ugh. Go, Tommy! Get her! Get her, Tommy! Hit her hard!
Adapted from Russ Meyer's 1965 cult film classic, Faster Pussycat Kill Kill.
Did you see that? That was too easy.
Monday, June 5th.
They're murderers! She killed them with her bare hands!
Kill Faster Pussycat! 11 p.m. on the Ubu Hour!
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Big Pharma, Market Failure, on Friday, June 9th at the First Unitarian Church in Portland. Corporate CEO Richard Master will speak with his new documentary, which focuses on the dynamics behind the escalating cost of pharmaceuticals in the U.S. and the impact of soaring healthcare costs on U.S. businesses, working families, and our overall economy. The screening will be followed by comments and Q&A session with Dr. Richard Masters. Again, that's Big Pharma Market Failure on Friday, June 9th at the First Unitarian Church, 1211 Southwest Main Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Wilkin & Company, PC, Certified Public Accountants, helping businesses, individuals, and nonprofit organizations make financial decisions based on their personal values since 1987. Wilkin & Company is located at 2435 Southwest 5th Avenue in Portland. Information at 503-225-1359 or wilkincpas.com.
Good morning and welcome to Locus Focus. I'm Barbara Bernstein, your host for this weekly conversation about our place on the planet. On this special edition of Locus Focus, we're going to hear my latest documentary, Sacrifice Zones, about efforts to turn the Pacific Northwest into a fossil fuel export hub and the thin green line of resistance that has so far slowed or stopped all the fossil fuel projects being proposed.
There is this very unique place on Earth, the Pacific Northwest. It's either about to become steamrolled by coal and oil heading from North America to foreign shores, or it is going to stand up in an opposition movement and prevent those projects from happening. We're the choke point between Montana and Wyoming and exports for the rest of the world. So when these projects are trying to come through, they have to come through the heart of the Northwest.
Every form of fossil fuel in one way or another has been proposed for export in the Lower Columbia River. Here we are, sitting at this choke point, many of us concerned about climate change and uniquely poised to do something about it.
No oil trains, no way, not ever, not today.
You're listening to Sacrifice Zones, a story about the pressure to transform a region of iconic landscapes and environmental stewardship into a global center for shipping fossil fuels.
If we think about two doors in front of us, one to the left is the door we open, and through that door is huge amounts of pollution in this region.
Eric DePlace is the policy director at Sightline Institute in Seattle.
We all have the biggest coal export terminals in North America, biggest oil by rail terminals in North America, biggest petrochemical refineries in the world, biggest liquefied natural gas plants in the world. The other door, we say no to all that stuff. And what we have is a Northwest that continues its environmental legacy and can continue to flourish.
For a time, it looked like we were going to get dozens of trains a week carrying oil and coal down the Columbia River Gorge to any one of many points on the Oregon or Washington coastline.
Dan Sears is the conservation director with Columbia Riverkeeper.
It's an accident of geography that the lowest path from the middle of North America to Asian markets happens to be through the Columbia River Gorge. It happens to be lined with people who want something better, lined with tribal fishermen whose livelihood is made between the railroad tracks and the river. It's this narrow pass that they're trying to move through, and we are going to do everything we can to make sure it stays closed.
The Pacific Northwest is looking at the equivalent of 5 or 6 Keystone XLs in terms of carbon throughput. That's in proposed projects that are new in the last few years. There's not a natural market for this stuff in North America, so they desperately need to get this infrastructure built between Coos Bay, Oregon and Prince Rupert, British Columbia, two places that most people around North America have never heard of or never been to. But if they can't get their pipelines, their rail ports built there, they're out of luck. And so the net effect of winning all of those fights in the Pacific Northwest would be locking up a huge amount of carbon under the ground where it is safely sequestered from planetary harm.
Bill McKibben came to Vancouver in 2013, right at the beginning of the oil fight, and he said, "Your geography is your destiny. And you happen to be in this place where all of you have this really large ability to shape what comes out of the ground, what can find a market. If they can't get it through the Columbia River Gorge, maybe it has to stay in the ground." And that's where we're seeing more and more effort going into holding what Eric calls the thin green line.
Every time we see another wave of projects proposed, we're told that they're inevitable, we're told that they're actually good for us, and we're told there's nothing we can do about them. But what's happening is the thin green line is winning on every single project they're engaging on.
So far, none of the projects have been able to get through.
Nick Abraham is a research fellow at the Sightline Institute.
And I think that's a testament to how little they help both these states, but also the level of opposition that they've come up against.
Oregon and Washington had 6 coal export terminals. British Columbia had another 4 that were new or expanded terminals. Of those 6 in Oregon and Washington, 4 have already died. The last 2 are very much on the ropes. They have gone from being slam dunk proposals where there's nothing the locals can do to basically begging for any attempt to get through the permitting process. We've seen everything from agricultural interests to the business community who's concerned about tying up the tracks with endless coal trains. The tribes and First Nations have engaged to an astonishing degree. Lots of neighborhood groups who just don't want to deal with that kind of pollution. So I love the fossil fuel infrastructure fights because they really do surface this notion about how bad they are for us in so many ways. It's not just about climate change. It's about 100 different things that we care about.
It's not just our own homelands. It's affecting now all you folks.
Kathy Sampson-Cruzy is a member of the Confederated Tribes of the Umatilla Indian Reservation.
The blinders have to come off. We see some of the wins that have happened based on treaty rights, on fishing rights that were so hard fought for. We know that their big shot attorneys are just milling over paperwork to try to erode some of those treaty rights now because it's been so strong in the fight against the fossil fuel infrastructure that is coming our way.
The fossil fuel industry simply sees the Northwest as a throughway to pass this huge reserve of carbon in the middle of North America to the markets that want to burn it.
The consequences of doing that would be to turn parts of the Northwest into, I think, sacrifice zones.
A sacrifice zone is a short way to say, this is a place where we're willing to gamble and say, okay, well, we think one derailment and spill every other year, that's okay.
any region that becomes a sacrifice zone sees a lot of the risk, a lot of the harms, but very few benefits. So, for example, the lower Columbia River could well be inundated with massive oil shipments with the attendant risks of oil spills, fires, derailments. It's very difficult to find any place on Earth that is home to a big extractive economy, particularly one based around fossil fuels, that sort of looks attractive, but also that is economically sustainable. Most of these places are boom and bust regions. Most of them suffer from decades, if not a century, of legacy pollution.
Where these places are being permitted have a need for new, long-lasting jobs. And a lot of people see this as a potential boon for creating jobs in the state.
Today I'm here to give support to the Vancouver Energy Project and urge the Port of Vancouver to extend the existing lease agreement. I'm concerned that the Port of Vancouver would oppose a project that has the great potential to create hundreds of high-income careers and millions of dollars in economic benefits to the constituents of this commission, the City of Vancouver, and the State of Washington.
The attraction that these industries sort of dangle in front of these communities is maybe it's 50 jobs, but the cost to those communities of siting a big coal or oil development there is enormous. And the locals get that. And in fact, what they have started to say is that you're not going to build a coal terminal in Portland, Oregon, because nobody would accept that there. You're not going to build a giant oil refinery or methanol refinery in Seattle because nobody would want it there. They're being targeted by a notoriously bad-acting industry who wants to put this stuff in the most vulnerable places.
No one wants to live next to a refinery. No one wants to live next to a coal-fired power plant.
Pat O'Heron is the board president of Oregon Physicians for Social Responsibility.
And the people that's happened to have been poor, people of color, indigenous communities.
There's been a real push to turn the Pacific Northwest, and in particular the lower Columbia River, into the Gulf Coast on the Pacific, where it would be just littered with liquefied natural gas and propane by rail and oil by rail and coal terminals. And if all that stuff were to get built, it would look probably a lot like the lower Mississippi River. And when you travel down the bottom 70 miles of that river below New Orleans, what you see are, you know, gas flares, refinery flares, and you see huge coal piles in the banks of the river. And you see a once rich ecological system and a once rich human community that has been systematically poisoned and abused to the point where it's barely limping along.
It's interesting that they chose to try and come through Washington, Oregon. It's almost a slap in the face to the reputation that these states have.
Over the years, there has been heavy industry on the Columbia, and we've seen some of the negative effects of that. We've also seen the effects of damming the river for hydroelectricity.
It's hard to compare anything to the kind of restructuring that the dams did to the entire Columbia River system. It turned a flowing river filled with salmon into a series of lakes that warm up in the summer to levels that are almost too warm for salmon to even survive.
Fish and Indian people are taken together as our identity.
Paul Lumley is a citizen of the Yakama Nation and was director of the Columbia River Intertribal Fish Commission from 2009 to 2016.
The Creator gave us these gifts, these first foods, the salmon, the game, the roots and the berries, and said, if you take care of these first foods, they will always take care of you. So when we signed the treaties with the United States back in 1855, we made sure that those first foods were protected. And there's very clear language in there that says the tribes have a right to fish at all usual and accustomed places. Well, back in 1855, I'm so glad that our forefathers protected us that way, but we never expected to see the river change the way it has with all these dams. We went from somewhere around 17 to 30 million fish in the Columbia River to just a couple million. When those dams were built, we lost tribal villages. So the sacrifices we made for the development of the hydropower system are huge.
The hydroelectric system has done so much damage to salmon survival and salmon runs that we really rely on the lower part of the river and the estuary to provide that key salmon habitat for salmon recovery and continued survival in the Columbia River. In comes the fossil fuel industry and decides to plunk itself down right in the middle of the critical area where we were really trying to turn the tide back and bring salmon back in the wake of all the damage that the hydro system did.
If we were to put on the banks of that river the biggest liquefied natural gas facility in the world and the biggest coal export terminal in North America and the biggest oil by rail terminal in North America and a couple of big propane by rail facilities, the toxic effects of that, the pollution effects on the river would in aggregate over time be profound.
Over the last 4 or 5 decades, the tribes have made great progress in many areas in the Columbia River Basin to bring back the salmon. We have a lot of fish coming back compared to even just a decade ago. Generally in Indian country, when we're faced with big decisions, you look towards the next 7 generations. When it comes to proposals like dams, fossil fuel, transportation corridors, I would hate to have the 7th generation look back and say, oh, I wish they had fought harder. I kind of say that now about those dams that were allowed to be built. What if we fought harder back then? But I don't want them to say that about my generation when it comes to coal and oil transportation to the Columbia River Gorge. I want them to look back and say, thank you for fending these proposals off.
For the most part, Oregon, Washington, British Columbia have been leaders in charting a clean energy economy. Largely as a consequence of that, they don't look or feel like the traditional sacrifice zones as we've thought of them. Now, if the plans go forward that the coal and oil industries have, we could very much start to look like that. We'll definitely see more oil spills, definitely see more coal dust pollution. But right now, there's this astonishing contrast between the way that we think about the region and perceive the region on a daily basis and the thing that the region could become in the future.
Emergency sirens roar at the Chevron refinery in Richmond, while a fire at the refinery sends flames and a plume of thick black smoke into the sky. The alarm means shelter in place.
August 6th, I leave work and I saw this massive black cloud going up in the sky, clearly from the refinery.
Andre Soto is the Richmond, California organizer for Communities for a Better Environment and a founding member of the Richmond Progressive Alliance.
I got a text on the phone from a colleague saying, call our members and tell them there's a shelter in place.
A neighbor across the street came out of her house and shouted up at us, why are you outside? Don't you know that we should be inside? Why should we be inside? There's a shelter in place, she said.
Steve Early is a Richmond resident and author of Refinery Town, Big Oil, Big Money, and the Remaking of an American City.
That's how we learned that, you know, the emergency protocol when you have a huge refinery fire is to go into your house and close all the windows and tape the doors. We took one look over the top of the hill here and saw Mount Vesuvius erupting, locked up, got in the car, went to Berkeley, which ended up being downwinded.